Your Health is supported by the North Carolina Cancer Hospital, serving you with innovative research and unequaled care. UNC Healthcare is leading, teaching, caring.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by 97.9 FM, WCHL, and UNC Family Medicine. Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our community, as Dr. Page and Goldstein specialize in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. And now, Your Health on WCHL.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine's Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
And I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And on our show today, Christy, we're going to be talking with David Roddenberry, co-founder of Healthy Wage, about financial incentives for weight loss. Is it going to be worth it?
I don't know. We'll find out. I'm excited.
We'll find out. And first, though, we've got some incentives for, I think, research that matters here about whether eating peppers can lower your risk of Parkinson's disease.
About if sucking on your kid's pacifier is a good idea or gross.
I think it's kind of gross, but maybe it's good. About whether a better treatment for constipation is to have fiber or to drink more liquids.
And pets and decreasing heart disease risk.
Well, let's talk about our very first research here, a study that was in the Annals of Neurology about eating peppers and a lower risk of Parkinson's disease, which is that pretty significant debilitating tremors and eventually can lead to people dying.
And they looked at nearly 500 people who were newly diagnosed with Parkinson's disease and another 650 unrelated people who did not have Parkinson's disease to follow their diet and their risk of developing the disease.
And this study really comes from research that shows that people who smoke sometimes have less rates of Parkinson's disease. And I've known this for a while, and they thought, well, maybe it's the nicotine in the cigarettes. It's probably not the cigarette smoke itself, but the nicotine. And it turns out, and I didn't know this, Christy, that peppers, green peppers, come from this plant family that actually has some high native nicotine. And so the question was, maybe eating these peppers could lower the risk. And yeah, sure enough, it did.
And tomatoes also have this nicotine derivative from it. So eating vegetables that naturally contain nicotine, like peppers and tomatoes, might reduce the risk of developing Parkinson's disease.
You know, I think this is like, stay tuned. And there's going to be some research, I think, about maybe people who have existing Parkinson's disease using a nicotine patch and to see if it benefits them. But this is a good news. I'm hoping it's red peppers and yellow peppers, not green peppers. I'm not a big fan of green peppers.
I don't like them either.
But if that's where I can get the nicotine and it lowers my risk of Parkinson's, maybe I'll eat the green peppers.
Well, did you suck on your kid's pacifier? I know it was a long time ago, but do you remember?
We were perfect parents.
Of course, that means.
We didn't use a pacifier and breastfeed. No. I think I did, but I thought it was kind of gross. But it was my kid, so I didn't care.
Yeah. Well, basically, I'll just self-disclose. We would drop it, and I would try to rinse it off at the beginning. But, you know, after a while, you just do what you have to do.
If you were in front of other people, you might rinse it off. But
I don't know. Or I might, turn my head and suck on the pacifier. Anyway.
Well, this particular study in the journal Pediatrics actually looked at research about what happens for people who do suck on their kid's pacifier. Is this a good idea or a bad idea?
Yeah, and the idea is that parents are sort of quote-unquote cleaning the pacifiers with their mouth instead of under the sink, and followed them and found out that there is some relationship between whether parents did this or not with the development of asthma and eczema and other allergies.
And they followed 184 infants who were significantly likely to have allergies. And when the babies were 6 months old, they surveyed these parents and how many of them cleaned their pacifiers. About 65 parents, almost a little less than half, had cleaned them by sucking on them. Some of them also rinsed them with tap water. And then they followed up these children of these parents who sucked on the pacifiers at 18 months of age and 36 months or 3 years of age to see what were the impacts.
So at 18 months, the kids who had parents who sucked on their pacifiers were 63% less likely to have eczema and 88% less likely to have asthma. However, by 36 months of age, the difference had gone away for asthma, but it was still tied if the parents sucked on the pacifier, it was tied to a 49% lower chance of the child having eczema. So there was some relationship there between those germs in the parent's mouth and the development or of asthma and eczema and allergies. But it's very unclear at this point that one thing causes or doesn't cause the other.
I think this validates the 30-second rule, Christy. When that pacifier drops, if it's less than 30 seconds, you can stick it in your own mouth. I don't know.
Some people call it the 5-second rule, but it's interesting to hear that you call it the 30-second rule. That's a long time.
Well, it takes me longer to get down to the ground and find the thing when it bounces around.
Okay, let's talk about fluids versus fiber for constipation.
Running right in there, American Journal of Gastroenterology looked at 8,000 men and women who participated in a survey and saw how many of them were constipated, and then looked at what were the things that seemed to relieve the constipation, things like exercise or fiber or drinking more liquids.
And of course, constipation is defined as having fewer than 3 bowel movements a week. So a lot of people think they need to go every day. But if you have less than 3 a week, or if it's particularly hard, that can be a diagnosis of constipation. We recommend diet, fiber, and exercise, and diet including fiber, but also a lot of fluids. But this is sort of looking at maybe the fluids are more beneficial than the fiber.
Yeah, it didn't appear that the exercise or the fiber had a strong likelihood of predicting the constipation, but those who consumed the least amount of liquid a day tended to be the most constipated, and those who got the most liquid a day were the least constipated. Now, this doesn't say how much you should drink, but I think if you don't drink liquids at all during the day and you're constipated, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, this doesn't change my practice in terms of recommending fiber, body movement, and increased fluids, but it might make me just pay a little more attention to let's go back to talking about how much you're drinking in a day and let's see if we can increase that.
Yeah, at least to a reasonable amount. You know, 24 ounces to 32 ounces is a very reasonable amount that you should at least be drinking here. We'll talk about reasonable amount here. Our last research that matters seems really reasonable, and it's good news here, which is about pets and heart disease risk.
This is exciting for those of us who like animals. This was a study of 5,200 adults that was cited by the American Heart Association, showing that dog owners, and perhaps you can apply that to other animals, dog owners were more physically active than non-owners because of walking their pets. And then there's this relationship between heart disease.
And this was published in the American Heart Association's journal Circulation. And it really shows that owning a pet is strongly associated with having less risk of heart disease. Now, Christy, let's fess up here. I got a new puppy recently. Her name is Mara, and I do get more regular exercise taking her out to walk than I did before I owned her. What about you?
Well, I have a cat, but she's been around for a while. But we did get a new guinea pig, and although I'm not walking the guinea pig,
are you running with her as she gets on that little cage and starts looking around?
His name is Chocolate. Just to catch him in the cage, I get a little bit of workout, but not enough probably to help my heart.
So it's not a function of exercise, maybe happiness.
It is. He's sweet.
Well, we're really happy about that, Christy.
We should get him to oink on the air.
For the 78 million listeners who have in the United States who own a dog and 86 million have a cat, good news. And I think that's enough for today.
Yeah, that concludes the Research That Matters portion of the show. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with David Roddenberry about financial incentives for weight loss. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page.
UNC Family Medicine's number 2 ranked national program is rapidly transforming healthcare through excellence in teaching, clinical care, and research. To participate in UNC Family Medicine's efforts to move innovative ideas into action, call 919-843-5112 or email yourhealth@unc.edu.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. a presentation of 97.9 FM, WCHL, and UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health on WCHL.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Today on Conversations, Christy, we've got a great topic and a great guest. We're talking with David Roddenberry, co-founder of Healthy Wage, about financial incentives for weight loss. Welcome to Your Health, Mr. Roddenberry.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
We are grateful to have you, and I know our listeners are eager to hear the kinds of things you've been working on for financial incentives for weight loss. Tell us how you came up with the concept for Healthy Wage.
Well, I actually saw an academic article in JAMA about the effectiveness of financial incentives for weight loss. Basically, the study had two groups of folks start the exact same weight management program, and one group was told that they would win money if they were successful at losing weight. And the exact same weight management program at the VA hospital in Philadelphia, and the folks with the cash incentive were 3 to 5 times more successful at losing weight in the exact same weight management program. We saw that and we thought, wow, this is a really simple solution to a really complicated question. And there's so many different ways that you can reward people with money for losing weight that we thought this was what we wanted to do professionally, to set up a Healthy Wage to give everyone the opportunity to have a cash incentive to make their weight loss more fun and more successful.
So tell us a little more about what you were doing, about your background that made you so empowered to do something about this.
Well, I studied healthcare policy. I have a master's, and I was working in finance, actually in New York, and it was 2008, and it was a suddenly less attractive career move. I found myself longing to return to my intellectual public health roots, and obesity, unfortunately, is our greatest public health challenge right now in the U.S., and so I saw the research and thought, wow, you know, let's see if we can empower all Americans to make their weight loss more successful with a cash incentive.
So let's dive right in a little bit into this topic, and which is obesity, chronic health condition. Huge numbers of Americans and internationally, probably more than maybe any other condition that I'm aware of in terms of people have it, and really bad health outcomes when you don't correct it. What do we know about what works and what doesn't work, and why thinking about financial incentives?
Well, financial incentives, it's a very, very early stages, I think, in terms of the understanding of, you know, how to structure a financial incentive, how much money you need to pay people, how often you need to pay them. And so that's why it's a sort of a really exciting field. But the core, what we do know is that if on a short-term basis, if people have a cash incentive and they're already working towards a weight loss goal, they're going to be more successful with the cash incentive. And so that's where, we've come in and we've offered, 3 months, 6 months, and 1 year challenges where you have the opportunity, you put in a little bit of money and you have the opportunity to win more money for losing weight. Now, large companies are experimenting with different types of financial incentive-based programs because they, want to change behavior of their employees and money. Because they're spending, $10,000 a person on healthcare, they have a lot of money to sort of play with. And so they are trying different types of financial incentive programs, and we're helping them sort of think through, how do you change behavior using money? But I would say it's still very early stages with respect to behavior change with financial incentives. And I would also say that it's very personalized. So it's not going to be the same incentive solution for everyone. Different people are going to require different amounts of money to move the needle with respect to behavior change.
So thinking about those options, your program has 3 options for participants to choose from: this 10% challenge, BMI challenge, and the matchup. Help us understand what the variation is there and what would be right for what kind of person.
Yeah, so we have our 3-month program is a $10,000 team challenge. And
wait, better say that a little more slowly. A $10,000 team challenge?
Yeah, that's right. You can win $10,000 for losing weight. You compete in teams of 5 against about 100 teams across the country, and the team that loses the greatest percentage weight wins $10,000. And second place gets $5,000, and third place gets $3,000. And that program is great for people who are in groups. So families do exceptionally well. You'll see the family unit with the husband and the wife and maybe her sister and her sister's husband and maybe a brother all doing the challenge together. So if you have a unit, whether it's friends, coworkers, or families that you want to lose weight with, it's very powerful being in a team, being in a competition, and having the chance to win $10,000. Our second program, it's called the 10% Challenge, and you double your money for losing 10% of your weight over 6 months. So you put in $150. If you lose 10% of your weight after 6 months, you win $300. And that's great if you're looking for motivation to jumpstart your weight loss. So let's say you're, you know, getting a new gym membership and you want to make sure you take advantage of it, or you're starting Weight Watchers or Nutrisystem and you're thinking, well, I want to make sure this time it's going to be different. 6 months. 10% of your weight in 6 months is like 26 pounds. You know, it's usually less than a pound a week to win the challenge. So it's very, very, very doable. It's just about sticking with your weight loss plan. And then our last challenge is totally free. It's funded by sponsors, including health systems and health insurance companies. And it's $100. It's called the BMI Challenge. You get paid $100 if you start obese and get to a healthy body mass index after 12 months. And if $100 isn't enough to motivate you to lose weight, you can put in $300 at enrollment and get $1,000 if you get to a healthy weight after 12 months. And that's obviously for folks who are obese and are looking to make a sort of a long-term lifestyle change and get to a healthy body mass index.
So you've just said some really interesting, potentially controversial, certainly exciting concepts. And I wonder if we can go back and delve into, like, the first one that comes up to me is, what do we know that really works? Because in the obesity, like smoking cessation, like many other chronic diseases, we know that people can quit for a week or a month, they can lower their weight, but they frequently relapse. What do we know about this idea of financial incentives? How do we know that it actually has merit?
Well, there have been double-blind, random controlled trials where people have had success and results, and it has been on a short-term basis. But from healthy wages perspective, we think of weight loss and weight maintenance as two different problems. Weight loss is a bet or a structured program where you're sort of, you know, putting in money and you have a discrete goal, you know, losing 10% of your weight over 6 months. That is very powerful for weight loss. But weight maintenance, that type of scheme isn't going to work. I mean, because you're not, you know, the goal is to take that amorphous concept of maintaining your weight loss and make it tangible on a weekly or a daily basis. And so we found success with different types of programs, like lottery-based programs, where, you know, each week if you're at the same weight, you're entered into a drawing. And that way, it's not so goal-driven. It's more sort of that accountability of just checking in on a weekly basis to make sure that you're not, you know, 1 pound doesn't become 3 pounds, become 10 pounds with respect to weight gain. So, like I said, it's still very early stages with respect to how effective financial incentives are. And we think that it's a more nuanced approach is going to be required. But there is a lot of potential and power here with respect to behavior change.
And so I'm interested on, we're going to need to take a break in just a moment, but in understanding this is different than I put a bunch of money into the gym and so I better go every month because I'm paying for it anyway. It's a different psychology. Do you see this as augmenting diet plans and workout plans or as a separate strategy?
No, that's exactly how we see it. We see it as an enhancement. If regardless of whatever program you're starting, whether it's a gym or a Weight Watchers or a Nutrisystem or just dieting on your own, if you have a financial incentive, you're going to be more successful with pursuing that endeavor. And that's sort of how we think about it. It's not a standalone solution. It's a way to enhance whatever other programming or solutions you're trying to get healthy.
Well, we're going to take a short break, but when we return, we're going to continue talking with our guest, David Roddenberry, co-founder of Healthy Wage, about financial incentives for weight loss. We'll be right back with Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Chrissy Page. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Your Health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We've been talking with David Roddenberry about financial incentives for weight loss. And before the break, you were talking a little bit about the using financial incentives to augment whatever exercise or weight loss program people are doing as a way to motivate people. And you alluded to companies, insurance companies or employers using this to target healthy employees. Tell us a little more about what people are doing.
Well, a healthy wage, we're working with 50 of the Fortune 500, many large health systems across the country as well, like Wake Med, and using our programs as a way to motivate their employees to get healthy. They typically share our programs as a way to generate buzz and excitement and generate weight loss results on a population-wide level. We have been fortunate to bring our solution to the market, but we think that there's because the Affordable Care Act recently expanded the ability for companies to use financial incentives, so up to 30% and in some cases 50% of your healthcare premiums can be in the form of wellness incentives. So we're talking about a lot of money. $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 can be given to employees who are at a healthy weight as a way to motivate the unhealthy folks to change their behavior. And we're concerned that just throwing money at the solution, isn't going to lead to the type of behavior change. That financial incentives have a lot of power and a lot of promise, but they are not a standalone solution, to wellness and to weight loss and behavior change. That it's a very complicated question, and the incentives need to be contextualized, in this sort of game-like format, where there's engagement and opting in from the employees. So we see a lot of potential and promise in this area, but we are concerned about how companies are currently implementing the program outside of healthy wage.
Well, you kind of allude to, I guess, a concern that maybe I would have as a provider, maybe many listeners might have, which is some of the ethical concerns of paying people to change behavior, because we could take weight loss and substitute any health behavior and say, should we be paying people to change behaviors ranging from taking medications to driving with your seatbelt on to wearing a helmet when you ride a bike? At what level do you begin to think, how do we decide what we're going to pay people to change which behaviors?
Well, I think we just need to look at what works. I personally don't struggle with the philosophical issues around it, because I think that it's an empirical question about, is it more cost effective to, put money in the pocket of consumers who are healthy and to thus lower our total overall healthcare spend by, improving the health of our society, than to not pay people and to spend more overall and have unhealthier folks. So I think, the real question is, does it work? And in what circumstances does it work? And making sure that it's applied in a way that's not regressive. I think that's the real, my concern right now is that I see a lot of companies are doing it.
What do you mean by regressive? I'm sorry.
We're penalizing the unhealthy. So if the cash payments aren't delivered in a way that's going to actually change behavior, and they're just a way to shift costs to the more obese, unfortunately, the more obese are typically lower socioeconomic status, and there's some racial issues as well. If the incentives aren't carefully constructed, and designed to change behavior, then there are some real issues about whether we should be using them.
So if it's targeted that life is just going to get a lot more expensive for you if you're obese, compared with, hey, we're going to partner with you And the financial incentive is part of that to help you make healthy choices. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's exactly right. If the incentive is sort of this carrot or a way to, and you're opting in, you're sort of choosing to take advantage of it, it's very different than, you know, you're obese and therefore, you know, you're costlier and, you know, you're going to pay more even if you have less ability to pay.
What about gambling? I wonder, you know, have you run into any people who are maybe brushing up against other addictions? If perhaps eating or sedentary lifestyle is a part of that, that gambling, throwing some money in, hoping to get $10,000 is some piece of this, or do you guard against that?
Well, we've carefully designed our programs so that, you know, they don't run afoul of any of those issues. You know, it's just like a contract where, you know, I'm saying if you do something, I will pay you. And there's no risk involved. Weight loss is in your control. And so if you lose the weight, you win the money. But more so, we also, we limit the size of the prizes. So $10,000, while certainly large and exciting, is not $100,000 or $1 million. This isn't mm-hmm. like a lottery with a, you know, $10 million prize. It's, it's a very exciting amount, but not a life-changing amount. Of money.
So you have in the team challenge, you said 100 teams. And
that's
so
right.
How many? 50?
About 100 to 150.
Right. So, and so the three or four might win the prizes. What happens to the other teams? Do they lose weight? And how does that work?
Yeah, they do. The median weight loss in the challenge is 5%, or 10 to 12 pounds per person.
Which is verified at the start
and the end of the program. And we're constantly sort of, we provide them with a 12-week structured program to help them stay on track. And our goal is to, improve the median weight loss in the competition to enhance completion rates as well as a weight loss. And so we're, you know, constantly trying to figure out what additional little prizes we can give along the way or engagement we can do to make sure they stay on track. Ultimately, they often finish because they're in that team and they've opted into the program. And so their team relies on them to finish the program. If we're in a team together and we don't, Adam doesn't finish, then we're not going to be able to finish as a group. And so, you know, that desire not to let down your team is very powerful and leads to pretty good results at the end of the competition.
Well, 5% of your body weight, I mean, that's still a win. So you lost the competition, but you still win. Which is a beautiful thing. Do you have any of your options that can include teenagers?
Not yet. I mean, right now we are for 18 or above, unless there's both parental and physician consent. So we have had, teenagers participate after talking to their doctor, but we mm-hmm. don't encourage it without doctor approval.
Okay.
And I wonder if you can just mention briefly the difference between this sort of program, which is team-based, frequently it sounds like game-based, and oftentimes public, with sometimes the intensely private nature of changing behavior. Help us understand how you as an expert in the field, how do you deal with that?
Well, we think it's actually really important that game-like sort of public nature of it creates that accountability mechanism that, you know, for some people, just a private financial transaction is enough where they, you know, put in a little bit of money and they have that opportunity to win more. But we find tremendous success with being in a team, sharing your struggles and your support and reaching out, creating a community where you feel comfortable to leverage your colleagues or your family for success.
Where can our listeners who may be interested in participating or getting more information, is there a website where people can access your program?
Absolutely. HealthyWage.com. And they can participate either individually, just join one of the three challenges, or they can get their company involved and have a little bit more excitement and success. Having the coworkers participate does lead to, we found, greater weight loss results. So your company can get involved at HealthyWage.com, or you can just sign up individually.
Fantastic.
Well, we've been talking with David Roddenberry, co-founder of Healthy Wage, about financial incentives for weight loss. Thank you so much for being our guest today on Your Health.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We're going to take a short break, but coming up on House Calls, we'll be answering questions about your health. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM WCHL, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. Your Health continues now.
Welcome back to Your Health. For the house call segment of our show today, Adam and I will spend a few minutes talking about your health questions and your concerns.
And if you have a question you want us to address on an upcoming show, send it to Christy or I at yourhealth@unc.edu. And Christy, we have some really good house call questions today about heartburn and toenail fungus.
And about high cholesterol and medicines and problems with urination after prostate cancer surgery.
And we're going to have one of our producers, Erica Lloyd, read us our very first house call question from a listener.
I've had muscle aches and heartburn for a year now. My doctor can't find out the cause. It's not acid reflux, and I am not on any medications. A friend of mine said it could be celiac disease. What do you think?
I want to hear more about your symptoms and about what all your doctor has done to try to look for the cause, if you had tried a medicine for acid reflux. And then after all of that, I would say possibly.
And I want to meet your friend. Is your friend a doctor? your friend who made a connection between muscle aches and heartburn, possibly being celiac disease. I don't think my doctor friends would make that connection, but it's a potentially very smart connection because you don't have a cause for your symptoms, and it's not what most doctors would think.
And so I would raise that with your doctor and say, okay, so we've tried all of these things. Could it be celiac disease? Could I get tested for that? And what else?
Or do you have symptoms? Or do you have symptoms of celiac disease? Because you might have some symptoms, but if you don't have weight loss and potentially diarrhea, you know, reflux is common and muscle aches are common. Celiac is rare.
Exactly.
So good question. Maybe.
We hope you get down to the bottom of it soon and feel better. Let's take our next house call question.
I have toenail fungus and my nails are growing thick and curving down. I took a fungal medication once and they got better, but it returned. What should I do now?
Thick nails that are infected with fungus and curving down is not a good thing to have, and it's a difficult thing to have because to treat it, the treatments just aren't great.
They're not. It sounds, hopeful that because you were on a fungus medicine once and that it got better, that maybe going back on those medications could improve it again. I would say, those medicines have a lot of side effects and that we need to monitor your liver and those sorts of things. But if it worked once, maybe it'll work again.
And there are, the culture sometimes to make sure it's not a mold other than a fungus to find out exactly what's growing there. Your doctor can do that. And there are these topical lotions you can put on, but they don't work so well either.
No.
So, you might see a dermatologist that can kind of help you with this. Surgery is sometimes an option here.
And some people just live with them. Just sort of cut them, keep them so they don't.
See a podiatrist sometimes to help you cut your nails because it's not easy to cut them.
Mm-hmm. Good luck to you.
Let's listen to our very next house call question from Erica.
I have high triglycerides and high cholesterol. I have been on Lipitor and Fenofibrate in the past. One helped the cholesterol and not the triglycerides, and the other helped the triglycerides and not the cholesterol. Is there a medicine I can take to help both?
I love the fact that you want to reduce your medicines. I think that is a good thing in principle to say, is there a way to be more efficient about this? But unfortunately, there are medicines that work really well with the triglyceride component of the cholesterol and other medicines that work really well on that LDL or bad cholesterol part of the cholesterol profile. And if you have them both very high, it's hard to find just one medicine that can do the trick.
And a lot of doctors will hesitate to put you on medicines like the Lipitor and the Fenofibrate at the same time because you risk an interaction that can really cause much more severe muscle aches. And so I'd say the pill would be, to start with, would be intensive dietary intervention, the pill, the diet pill, which is really reduced through your diet things that cause high cholesterol and reduce through your diet things that cause high triglycerides. Maybe that's the strongest pill.
you know, we will ask our health sciences librarians to put up a list of low cholesterol foods and high cholesterol foods.
And low triglyceride foods and high triglyceride foods.
Exactly. But I would start, there are the statin medicines that can make a small difference in your triglycerides along with your cholesterol profile. But work with your doctor, and the answer is in diet and weight loss.
Maybe even a little fish oil in your future. Let's take our very next house call.
My dad has prostate cancer and had surgery. He still needs to get up and urinate many times in the night. He is tired. Is there anything he can do to help this and allow him to get more sleep?
Well, we're sorry that he's had to have this surgery, and we're sorry, too, that he's got significant problems with having to get up tonight at night to urinate. We know that's not easy.
It's not. And unfortunately, problems with urination after prostate cancer surgery is very common. And so depending on his overall health and what else is going on, you might work with your doctor to come up with an approach that's tailored for him. Maybe there are medicines he could take that would reduce his need to go to the bathroom at night, or just changes in when he drinks fluids.
Or what type of fluids? Make sure that he's not drinking things that have caffeine in it that could stimulate the bladder.
And or alcohol.
No alcohol. And don't be drinking much fluid after about 6 p.m. at night, so there's less need to get up at the night to urinate.
And some people will do strategies either with a catheter or with having just bedding that can allow him to urinate, or with an adult diaper in the night that can help him get some good sleep without having to get up, especially if there's a risk of falling down by getting up so much in the night.
And finally, the same thing we tell women who've had babies and are having some urinary incontinence and leakage, these Kegel exercises, which we'll put up a link to our health sciences librarians, these are really good for men too, and they could actually help strengthen the bladder musculature, which might actually help prevent some of this problem. So good luck. Thank you for sharing that question, and thank you for all of your questions today. We encourage any of our listeners to send us your own questions at yourhealth.unc.edu.
You can also visit us online at yourhealthradio.org. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and our health app by searching Your Health, one word, for a free download.
We'd like to thank the staff at WCHL, the UNC Department of Family Medicine, UNC Healthcare for their sponsorship, and our guest today, David Roddenberry. We hope you'll join us next time on Your Health.
On behalf of Your Health, I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein. I look forward to talking to you again next week. Bye-bye.
The purpose of Your Health Radio is to educate listeners on healthcare issues. Listeners should always discuss their own health or medical concerns with their personal physician or other healthcare provider. Your Health is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
You've been listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM, WCHL, presented by UNC Family Medicine. You can find this or any other episode of Your Health at WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.